Sit back, relax, and open your mind. You are now listening to the Paranormal Patriot.
You are talking about the nonsensical ravings of a lunatic mind.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories.
You know, it's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Because you'd be in jail.
You know, we've seen three glowing figures out in the field. It seemed like their heads were glowing.
Happy Halloween 2020, everyone. Let's go have some fun. Get your costumes on and dress warm. It's Halloween. I'm walking down the street and I'm yelling trick or treat. And I see a kid standing there covered in a sheet. I'm freezing my ass off as it's starting to sleet. And all the crazy little monsters now are starting to creep. I see a Spider-Man and a cute little nurse. And a car that drives by that looks just like a hearse. But the night is getting worse because I'm gonna steal his bag of candy and his mama's purse. I hide behind the tree and I'm ready to jump out. I'm gonna steal his bag of candy just so I can see him out. They're coming closer to me and I'm ready to move. I'm gonna scare him so bad he'll probably run away too. I jump in front of him and yell boo. He gets real mad, he drops his bag of candy, pulls a knife and then stabs. It's my last Halloween as I'm laying here dead. Stabbed in the spleen by a 10-year-old kid.
Alrighty, everybody. Welcome one, welcome all. World premiere broadcast. The first time anybody has ever heard that. That is the new Halloween song by multiple myself and yours truly, Tommy V. It is a 7-minute, 30-second magnum opus. It is our most amazing song. And it is due out now. It is coming out. It is being released as we speak. It's already out on iTunes and Apple Music. It's going to hit Spotify, Deezer, Tidal, Google. Anywhere where you get your music, you are going to be able to hear and download and stream and share this song. It's called Halloween 2020, and it's by multiple myself and Tommy V. All I ask is that you just download it, stream it, share it, listen to the song, and give me feedback. GhostSeeker4 at charter.net. We do have a Facebook page, Multiple Myselfs, S-E-L-F-S, and Tommy V. Go to that page, like the page, go to the Paranormal Patriot on Facebook, like the Paranormal Patriot on Facebook, Instagram. It's a great song. We put a lot of work into this. This was the song that we tried to put out last year and just it never worked out, and I'm glad it didn't, because this song has been head and shoulders, night and day better than the one we were going to put out last year. So Halloween 2020 by multiple myselfs and Tommy V. Wherever you get your music, download it, share it, stream it, do what you can, but buy the song. It's a great song. It'll surpass Halloween. I mean, it's a song you can listen to past Halloween. And it was something that my brother Nick and I just, we really put our heart into. We spent a lot of time. I mean, it's 7 minutes, 30 seconds. You don't just throw something together for 7 minutes, 30 seconds. It was a long, arduous task. And it's a good song. I really like it. I've actually let my family listen to a couple bits of it, not the whole thing, and they like it. They said, this is great. Come the 24th, we are going to have a worldwide public premiere of this song at our Halloween party. So download it, stream it, do whatever you need to do to share the song and get the word out. So, but hey, you're listening to the Paranormal Patriot, right? You're not listening to multiple myself and Tommy V, so let's get on with the show. So before I begin, I just want to say thank you to everyone that sent me Facebook messages and emails telling me how much they enjoyed the last show, The Hungarian Vampire. They appreciated the political, but everybody seemed to like the story of the Hungarian Vampire. Nobody really heard about Bela Kiss, and it was very, very, very well received, and I got a lot of people saying that was a great story. You know, I don't know if he was really a vampire, but it was a great story. So that tells me you guys like this true crime, these serial killer stuff, so maybe I need to incorporate some of that into the show. But on this show, we are going to talk about one of the most infamous, I mean, do I dare say the most infamous time in this country's history? We are going to talk about the Salem witch trials, and everyone should know the basics about the Salem witch trials. In Salem, Massachusetts, in 1692, they started. But do you really know the details? And do you really know what these men and women, and sometimes children, had to go through to prove that they were not a witch? And what happened to those that were found guilty of being a witch? A lot of people say they were burned at the stake, they were hung, they were drawn and quartered. Well, we're going to get to the bottom of that on this show. We're going to talk about what actually happened to lead up to the Salem witch trials. We're going to talk about who are the players of the Salem witch trial, how this all began, and what happened to those that were involved and were found guilty during the Salem witch trials. What happened to them? Were they executed? Were they imprisoned and then set free? We're going to find out. And then we're going to talk about, are there really witches? Is being a witch a real thing? Does the witch of The Wizard of Oz, do the witches of the Craft movie, do they exist? Are there people out there that can cast spells on you and can change you and harm you? We're going to find out on this week's show. But before we get into the show, I've got to take a break because we've got myself and I have got some great friends. They're called Twisted. T-W-I-Z-T-I-D. They are a rap group out of Detroit. They are just blowing up the scene, and I want to give them a little bit of airtime. Because on October 30th, Devil's Night, they are going to have a digital concert. They're going to have an internet concert of their iconic Freak Show album, which turns 20 years old this year. Unbelievable. I remember camping out at a store called Media Play in Saginaw. Camping out, waiting till midnight to buy this album and Insane Clown Posse's Bizarre Bizarre album. They all came out at the same time. And oh my gosh, what a night that was. It was a great night. Even my parents showed up. How crazy is that? But I want to give them a little bit of airtime because I myself am going to be watching this concert, because this is really the only concerts we can go to nowadays, but it is going to be amazing. So what I want you to do is just sit back, relax, just relax, because Twisted is going to tell you about their Devil's Night internet concert. Now, I will tell you the language on this may be a little rough, but I'm telling you, Twisted, Jamie Madrox, Monoxide, they are a great bunch of guys. So here they are, telling you about their internet concert on October 30th.
This is a public service announcement.
Swaya!
Motherfuckers and motherfuckettes.
Devil's Night.
Show them who's behind us. Look who's behind us, goddammit.
I'm here.
We brought the motherfucking fam with us. Freak Show.
A brand new digital event, the experience. Tell them, goddammit.
Tell them about when it'll be.
I'm not telling you anything right now.
All right,
what you're
going
to do is you're going to go onto all the social medias. You're going to follow it like you're looking for a kidnapped child.
God bless it. That got dark.
Well, I'm just saying. Freak Show, the experience.
All right.
Devil's Night, October 30th.
What he said.
Killer Blaze, Madrox, myself. George will be there.
Dang.
All righty, let's get on with the show. Remember, October 30th, Twisted. Trust me, you'll like these guys. These guys may be a little bit rough. They may have some language, but they are an absolutely amazing bunch of guys. So let's get into the show and let's talk about the Salem witch trials. What are the Salem witch trials? We all know, or we were all taught in school about the Salem witch trials. In 1692 in Salem, Massachusetts, it began the witch trials where people were accused of being witches. Upwards of 150 men, women, and children were accused of being witches. Now, it all started in January 1692. 9-year-old Elizabeth, or some people called her Betty, Paris, and 11-year-old Abigail Williams. Now, Abigail Williams is the daughter and niece of Samuel Paris, who was the minister of the Salem village. They began having fits. Now, this included violent contortions and uncontrollable outbursts of screaming. So they went to a local doctor by the name of William Griggs, and he diagnosed bewitchment. Other young girls in the community began to exhibit similar behaviors, and that included Ann Putnam Jr. I didn't realize women had junior names, but I guess in 1692 they did. Mercy Lewis, Elizabeth Hubbard, Mary Walcott, and Mary Warren. Now, in late February, arrest warrants were issued for the Paris's Caribbean slave, Tituba, along with two other women who were the homeless beggar, Sarah Good, and the poor elderly, Sarah Osborne. Now, these three women were arrested because the two girls, 9-year-old Betty Paris and Abigail Williams, accused them of bewitching them. Now, the three accused witches were brought before the magistrates, Jonathan Corwin and John Haythorne, and questioned. Even as their accusers appeared in the courtroom, well, let's say their accusers were giving a grand display. They were having spasms, contortions, screaming, and writhing. Good and Osborne, they denied their guilt. However, Tituba confessed. Now, it is likely that she confessed, seeking to save herself from a certain conviction by acting as an informer. She claimed that there were other witches acting alongside her in service of the devil against the Puritans. And keep in mind, in 1692, Salem, Massachusetts, that community was Puritans. Now, the Puritan sect is very religious, and for lack of better terminology, they would not take well to witches being in their community. Now, so Tabuda, she, again, likely was confessing to save herself from punishment in acting as an informer. She went ahead and claimed that there were other witches alongside her. Now, as hysteria spread throughout the community and beyond into the rest of Massachusetts, a number of others began to be accused. Now, that included Martha Corey and Rebecca Nurse. Now, these two were both regarded as upstanding members of the church. They also accused the 4-year-old daughter of Sarah Good. Now, like Tituba, several accused, quote-unquote, witches confessed and named still others. And the reason they did that is because if they confessed, their sentence wasn't death. Now, the trials began soon afterward and began to overwhelm the local justice system in May 1619. And again, remember, this started in January 1692. In May 1692, the newly appointed governor of Massachusetts, William Phipps, ordered the establishment of a special court of oyer, which means to hear, and terminer, which means to decide. So he ordered a special court to hear and decide on witchcraft cases that emanated from Suffolk, Essex, and Middlesex counties. Now, these were presided over by judges including Haythorne, Samuel Sewell, and William Stoughton. The court handed down its first conviction against Bridget Bishop on June 2nd. And remember, go back. This started in January 1692. The first conviction was Bridget Bishop. She was convicted on June 2nd. She was hanged 8 days later on what would become known as Gallows Hill in Salem, Massachusetts. After that, five more people were hanged that July, five in August, and eight in September. In addition, seven other accused witches died in jail, while the elderly Giles Corey, which was Martha's husband, was pressed to death by stones after he refused to enter a plea at his arraignment. When all was said and done, 18 other people followed Bridget Bishop and were hung on Salem's Gallows Hill. 150 other men, women, and children were accused over the next several months. It took till September for the hysteria to die down and public opinion to turn against the trials. But by that time, it was too late. Respected minister Cotton Mather had warned of the dubious value of spectral evidence or testimony about dreams and visions. His concerns during this whole Salem witch trial process went largely unheeded. Now, Increase Mather, who was president of Harvard College, and he was Cotton's father, later joined his son in urging that the standards of evidence for witchcraft must equal to those for any other crime, concluding that it would be better that 10 suspected witches may escape than one innocent person be condemned. Now, amid waning public support for the trials, Governor Phipps dissolved the court of Oyer and Terminer in October and mandated that its successor disregard spectral evidence. So they went from January to September. In these men, women, and children, they were accused of any and everything, and if it was deemed witchcraft, which has no, at that point, scientific basis, it didn't matter at that point. So Governor Phipps mandated that the specter or the successor disregard spectral evidence. In other words, we can't use something that we don't understand. However, trials continued. They dwindled, but they continued until early 1693. And by the time 1693 rolled around, Mayor Phipps had pardoned and released all those in prison on witchcraft charges. Now, in January 1697, the Massachusetts General Court declared a day of fasting for the tragedy of the Salem witch trials. The court later deemed the trials unlawful, and the leading justice, Samuel Sewall, publicly apologized for his role in the process. However, the damage to the community continued to linger. Even after Massachusetts passed the legislation restoring the good names of the condemned and providing financial restitution to their heirs in 1711. It seems like the state of Massachusetts realized by 1711 at the latest that these trials, these condemnations, these executions of innocent people were a sham. But the fact is, there is no amount of money that will bring these people back. Can you imagine, in 1692, you being brought up on charges of witchcraft? You put before a court knowing that the odds are stacked against you and you're found guilty. Knowing you didn't do anything wrong. Knowing that you were maliciously accused of witchcraft by essentially two little girls. Nobody can even begin to say what caused these two girls, the 9-year-old and the 11-year-old. Nobody knows what caused them to go into these fits. Was it just a cry for attention? But then to accuse people of witchcraft, and then to see 18 people, 19 people, die on the gallows because of something you started? Oh, man, I don't know if I could live with that. But now before Salem, there was in Hartford, Connecticut, in 1662, 30 years prior to the Salem witch trials. there was a, I guess you'd call it the first American witch hunt. Now, in late March 1662, John and Bethia Kelly grieved over the body of their 8-year-old daughter inside their Hartford, Connecticut home. Elizabeth, their daughter, had been fine just days before when she returned home with a neighbor by the name of Goodwife Ayers. The distraught parents, who were grasping at any explanation for their loss, they took to looking at the hand of the devil at work. You see, the parents were convinced that Elizabeth had been fatally possessed by Goodwife or Goody Ayers. The Kellys testified that their daughter first took ill after she returned home with her neighbor, and they say that she exclaimed, "Father, Father, help me, help me. Goodwife Ayers is upon me. She chokes me. She kneels on my belly. She will break my bowels. She pinches me. She will make me black and blue." Now, after young Elizabeth's death, accusations of bewitchment flew and fingers were pointed at numerous townspeople. Hysteria then gripped Hartford, which, a town that a generation before had witnessed the first execution of a suspected witch in the American colonies, and that was Alice Young of Windsor, Connecticut. She was sent to the gallows erected in Hartford's Meeting House Square, which is now the site of Connecticut's whole old house square. Alice Young was hung May 26th, 1647. Now, witchcraft at the time was one of 12 capital crimes decreed by Connecticut's colonial government in 1642. The legal precedent cited by devout Puritan colonists was of a divinely higher order, and they used biblical passages such as Exodus 22:18, "Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live," and Leviticus 20:22, which says, "A man or a woman that hath a familiar spirit, or that is a wizard, shall surely be put to death." Now, after Alice Young's public hanging, at least 5 other Connecticut residents met a similar fate. However, it was in Hartford in 1662, 30 years before the infamous Salem witch trials, that a witch hunt hysteria took hold, and it resulted in 7 trials and 4 executions. Now, shortly after 8-year-old Elizabeth Kelly died, Ann Cole suddenly became afflicted, shaking violently and shouting blasphemy. Now, according to numerous reports, she was, quote-unquote, taken by the devil. Now, Ann Cole, blamed her bewitchment on a neighbor, Rebecca Greensmith, who was described as one townsperson as a lewd, ignorant, considerably aged woman. Others already suspected her of witchcraft in the Kelly case, in other words, the 8-year-old girl who died case. Well, Miss Greensmith began to accuse others, and even their spouses, of being the true witches. In what became a vicious circle, neighbors began testifying against other neighbors. Now, back to Goody Ayers. Her husband, perhaps in an attempt to save his wife, joined the chorus of Greensmith's accusers. Now, the most damning testimony supposedly came from Greensmith herself, who reportedly admitted to having familiarity with the devil and said at Christmas they would have a merry meeting to form a covenant. Greensmith implicated her husband and said she had met in the woods with 7 other witches, including Goody Ayers, Mary Sanford, and Elizabeth Seeger. Neighbors testified that they saw Seeger dancing with other women in the woods and cooking mysterious concoctions in black kettles. Now, 2 of the suspects, likely the Greensmiths, were subjected to the swimming test, and we'll get into this in a minute. We're going to go over the tests that they used back then to see who was a witch. Well, the Greensmiths were submitted to the swimming test, in which their hands and feet were bound and they were cast into the water to test the theory that witches are unable to sink. After they were tried, the Greensmiths were indicted for not having the fear of God before thine eyes. Thou hast entertained familiarity with Satan. the grand enemy of God in mankind, and by his help hast acted things in a preternatural way. The court's verdict, according to the law of God and the established law of this commonwealth, was thou deserves to die. Now, Rebecca Greensmith had confessed in open court. Nathaniel Greensmith had protested his innocence, but they both met the same fate, which is the noose. Sanford was also sent to the gallows. After their execution, Cole reportedly was restored to health. Ayers fled Hartford. While Seeger was finally convicted of witchcraft in 1665, although the governor reversed the verdict the following year, Mary Barnes of Framingham, Connecticut, was also swept up in the region's witch hunt and was executed alongside the Greensmiths. The four executions of suspected witches in Hartford were to be Connecticut's last. Another hysteria broke out in Fairfield, Connecticut, in 1692, but none of those convicted met death. Connecticut held its final witch trial in 1697, a half century after Alcee Young's execution. During that period, there were 46 prosecutions and at least 11 executions. So the witch hysteria in early America in the late 1600s and mid-1600s was very widespread and very prevalent. But let's say you were accused of being a witch in that time. What were the trial tests? In other words, how would they prove that you were a witch or were not a witch? There were essentially seven of them. The first one I mentioned before, the swimming test. Now, accused witches were dragged to the nearest body of water, stripped to their undergarments, bound, and then tossed in to see if they would sink or float. Now, the prevalent theory of the time were witches were believed to have spurned the sacrament of baptism. It was thought that the water would reject their body and prevent them from submerging. Now, according to this logic, an innocent person would sink like a stone, but a witch... Well, a witch would simply bob on the surface. The victim typically had a rope tied around their waist so they could be pulled from the water if they sank, but it wasn't unusual for accidental drowning deaths to occur. Now, witch swimming derived from the trial by water, which is an ancient practice where suspected criminals or sorcerers were thrown into rushing waters to allow a higher power to decide their fate. This custom was banned in many European counties in the Middle Ages, only to reemerge in the 17th century as a witch experiment, and it persisted in some locales well into the 18th century. For example, in 1710, the swimming test was used as evidence against a Hungarian woman named Dorko Boda, who was later beaten and burned at the stake as a witch. In 1710. The second test was a prayer test. Now, medieval wisdom held that witches were incapable of speaking scripture aloud. So accused sorcerers were made to recite selections from the Bible, usually the Lord's Prayer, without making mistakes or omissions. While it may have been simply a sign that the suspected witch was illiterate or nervous, any errors were viewed as proof that the speaker was in league with the devil. This twisted test of public speaking ability was commonly used as hard evidence in witch trials. In 1712, again, the Salem witch trials were 1692. In 1712, it was applied in the case of Jane Wenham, an accused witch who supposedly struggled to speak the words, "Forgive us our trespasses, and lead us not into temptation," during her interrogation. Still, even a successful prayer test didn't guarantee an acquittal. During the Salem witch trials, the accused sorcerer George Burroughs flawlessly recited the prayer from the gallows just before his execution. The performance was dismissed as a devil's trick, and the hanging proceeded as planned. The third test was a touch test. Now, the touch test worked on the idea that victims of sorcery would have a special reaction to physical contact with their evildoer. In cases where a possessed person fell into spells or fits, the suspected would be brought into the room and asked to lay a hand on them. A non-reaction, well, it signaled innocence. But if the victim came out of their fit, well, it would be seen as proof that the suspect had placed them under a spell. Now, touch tests played a famous part in the 1662 trial of Rose Cullender and Amy Denny, two elderly English women charged with bewitching a pair of young girls. The children had been suffering from fits that had left their fists clenched so tightly that even a strong man could not pry their fingers apart. But early tests showed that they easily opened whenever Cullender or Denny touched them. To ensure the reaction was genuine, judges had the children blindfolded and touched by other members of the court. The girls unclenched their fists anyway, and that suggested they were faking. But even this wasn't enough to prove the women's innocence. Cullender and Denny were both later hanged as witches. Another form of a test is called witch cakes. Now, this is a bizarre form of counter magic. The witch cake was a supernatural dessert used to identify suspected evildoers. In cases of mysterious illness or possession, witch hunters would take a sample of the victim's urine, mix it with rye meal and ashes, and bake it into a cake. That sounds disgusting, but this stomach-turning concoction was then fed to a dog, which dogs are familiars or animal helpers of witches, in hopes that the beast would fall under its spell and reveal the name of the guilty sorcerer. During the hysteria that preceded the Salem witch trials, the slave, Tabuda, which we talked about earlier, famously helped prepare a witch cake to identify the person responsible for bewitching young Betty Paris and others. The brew failed to work, and Tabuda's supposed knowledge of spells and folk remedies was later used as evidence against her when she was accused of being a witch. This is disgusting. This is the lengths that back in the late 1600s that people would go to accuse people of being witches. I'm going to bake a cake full of your urine. That's a good birthday cake. Good birthday cake. Thank you, Cosmic Dreamer. And then they would look for what they call witches' marks. Now, witch hunters often had their suspects stripped and publicly examined for signs of an unsightly blemish that witches were said to receive upon making their pact with Satan. This quote-unquote devil's mark could supposedly change shape and color and was believed to be numb and insensitive to pain. Prosecutors might also search for the witch's teat, which is an extra nipple allegedly used to suckle the witch's helper animals. In both cases, it was easy for even the most minor physical imperfections to be labeled as a work of the devil himself. Moles, scars, birthmarks, sores, tattoos could easily qualify, so examiners rarely came up empty-handed. In the midst of the witch hunts, desperate villagers would sometimes even burn or cut off any offending marks on their bodies, only to have their wounds labeled as proof of a covenant with the devil. Then they would do the pricking and scratching tests. Now, if witch hunters struggled to find obvious evidence of witches' marks on a suspect's body, they might resort to the grotesque, ghastly practice of pricking as a means of sussing out the proof that they're a witch. Witch hunting books and instructional pamphlets noting that the marks were insensitive to pain and couldn't bleed, so examiners used specially designed needles to repeatedly stab and prick at the accused person's flesh until they discovered a spot that produced the desired results. Now, in England and Scotland, the torture was eventually performed by well-paid professional what they called prickers, many of whom were actually con men who used dull needlepoints to identify fake witches' marks. Now, along with pricking, the unfortunate suspect may be subjected to scratching by their supposed victims. This test was based on the notion that possessed people found relief by scratching the person responsible with their fingernails until they drew blood. If their symptoms improved after clawing at the accuser's skin, it was seen as partial evidence of guilt. And then lastly, incantations. Now, incantations are also known as charging. This test involved forcing the accused witch to verbally order the devil to let the possessed person come out of their fit or trance. Other people would also utter the words to act as a control, and judges would then gauge whether the statements had any effect on the victim's condition. Charges were famously used in the 16th century witch trial of Alice Samuel and her husband and daughter, who were accused of bewitching five girls from the wealthy Throckmorton family. During the proceedings, judges forced the Samuels to demand that the devil release the girls from their spell by stating, "As I am a witch, so I charge the devil to let Mistress Throckmorton come out of her fit at this present." When the girls immediately recovered, the Samuels were found guilty and hanged as witches. That is the tests that you would have to endure if you were accused of being a witch in early America. And it's horrifying. It's horrific. There's no doubt in my mind, in most anybody's mind, that the witch trials prior to Salem, the Salem witch trials, and anything after were just pomp and circumstance. They were a show. They were just, they were trying to get a guilty verdict. They would do anything to prove that these innocent people were witches. And when they were proved to be witches, they were hung. Now, we've heard stories of witches burned at the stake. It's not true in Salem. None of the accused witches were burned at the stake. They were hung. Now, that doesn't change the end result. I mean, you're dead. You've been executed. However, I would believe that, and I hope to never experience either one, but I would think being hung and being burned at the stake, being hung is a quicker death, a less painful death. But the fact remains that numerous innocent people were put to death over hysteria of a concoction by young girls. And that begs the question, are witches real? Well, let's look at the origin of witches. Now, early witches, and this is in the time of, I guess you would say, the Salem witch trials. They were people who practiced witchcraft, using magic spells and calling upon spirits for help or to bring about change. Most witches were thought to be pagans doing the devil's work. Many, however, were simply natural healers or so-called wise women whose choice of profession was misunderstood. Now, it's really unclear when witches came onto the historical scene, but one of the earliest accounts of a witch is in the Bible in Samuel 1. It is thought to be written between 931 BC and 721 BC. It tells of the story of when King Saul sought the witch of Endor to summon the dead prophet Samuel's spirit to help him defeat the Philistine army. Well, the witch roused Samuel, who then prophesied the death of Saul and his sons. The next day, according to the Bible, Saul's son died in battle, and Saul committed suicide. No other Old Testament verses condemn witches, such as the often cited Exodus 22:18, which says, "Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live." Additional Bible passages caution against chanting or using witches to contact the dead. So, we know witch hysteria. It took hold in Europe during the mid-1400s, where many accused witches confessed, often under torture, and they were executed. Between the years of 1500 and 1660, up to 80,000 suspected witches were put to death in Europe. Around 80% of them were women thought to be in cahoots with the devil and filled with lust. Germany had the highest witchcraft execution rate, and Ireland had the lowest. Now, the publication of Malleus Maleficarum, written by two well-respected German Dominicans in 1486, likely spurred witch mania to go viral. The book, usually translated as The Hammer of Witches, was essentially a guide on how to identify, hunt, and interrogate witches. So you could say that in the 1400s, this book went viral. Now let's talk about one of the most famous witches. Now, in Virginia, one of the most famous witches is Grace Sherwood. Her neighbors allege that she killed their pigs and hexed their cotton. Other accusers followed, and Sherwood was brought to trial in 1706. Now, the court decided to use the controversial water test, which I talked about earlier, where they tie you to rocks and see if you float or sink. They used this test to determine her guilt or innocence. Now, Sherwood's arms and legs were bound, and she was thrown into a body of water. So again, if she sank, she was innocent. If she floated, she was guilty. Well, Sherwood didn't sink and was convicted of being a witch. She wasn't killed, but put in prison for 8 years. So that brings us to today. Do we live amongst witches? Now, modern day witches, they do exist. I belong to a number of Facebook pages for spells and Wiccans, and because I believe in a different type of religion, I guess. I do believe in God. I think God is different than a lot of people think it is, but I belong to a number of pages where there are people actually performing spells. Modern day witches of the Western world, well, they practice Wicca. And Wicca is an official religion in the United States and Canada. Wiccans avoid evil and the appearance of evil at all costs. Their motto is to, quote unquote, harm none, and they strive to live a peaceful, tolerant, and balanced life in tune with nature and humanity. Now, many modern-day witches still perform witchcraft, but there is seldom anything sinister about it. Their spells and incantations are often derived from the Book of Shadows, a 20th-century collection of wisdom and witchcraft. And it can be compared to the act of prayer in other religions. A modern-day witchcraft potion is more likely to be an herbal remedy for the flu instead of a hex to harm someone. Today's witchcraft spells are usually used to stop someone from doing evil or harming themselves. Ironically, while it's probable some historical witches used witchcraft for evil purposes, many may have embraced it for healing or protection against the immorality that they were accused of. But witches, whether actual or accused, still face persecution and death. Several men and women suspected of using witchcraft have been beaten and killed in New Guinea, and that is since 2010. It includes a young mother who was burned alive. Similar episodes of violence against people accused of being witches have occurred in Africa, South America, the Middle East, and immigrant communities in Europe and the United States. So, witches. Do witches actually exist? Yes, they do. Witches actually exist. Were they actually witches during the prelude to the Salem witch trials? Were they witches during the Salem witch trials? I highly doubt it. I don't doubt that there were people that were using spells and incantations to try and harm people. I don't doubt that that was happening back during the Salem witch trials and before. I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that there are people today that are using spells. I've seen these people asking for what spell to use to make a person feel sick. I see it on Facebook all the time. There are people out there that are witches. There are people. Now, a male witch is usually called a warlock. Now, you can say that they don't exist, but they do. They really, truly do. Are they out to turn you into a toad? Are we looking at the witches of the Wizard of Oz? Or the, you know, people that can change your outcome, change your demeanor, change how you look. Actually, I really like this movie, The Craft. Are they people that can say, okay, you're going to lose your hair, and they touch you on the head, and then you lose all your hair? I'm not going to say it's not real, but it's all about, and this goes to my religion, my beliefs. I'm a big believer of you are controlling who you are, what your life is. And your abundance and your desires are created by you. And look at this, look at the name Abracadabra. We've all been to a magic show where the magician says Abracadabra. Steve Miller had a pretty good song by the name of Abracadabra. Well, what we don't look into, we don't dwell, and we don't look into the actual meaning of the word. The meaning of the word, it's a Jewish word. And Abracadabra is Hebrew, Ibra Kadabri, which means I will create as I speak. In other words, you have the ability to create your surroundings. You have the ability to create what you want. You have to say it. You have to believe it. You have to mean it. I am a firm believer of affirmations. I'm a firm believer that what you desire, if you say it, call it to the universe, call it to God, call it to Muhammad, call it to Buddha, call it to Mother Earth, whoever, Allah. I'm a firm believer that if you announce what you want and mean it and really, truly want it and work towards it, you just can't sit back and say, okay, I want $1 million and I'm going to sit here, not work and not do anything and expect it to come. You have to earn it. But I believe, now, I've told you the story many, many moons ago where when in my first marriage, we were living in a rental house in Michigan, in mid-Michigan. And every now and then we would go to her cousin's house. And her cousin's house was literally, it was on the border between Saginaw Township, where I grew up, and the city. It was in a really great neighborhood. And it would, the house was in a cul-de-sac, so it was really quiet, really no traffic around there. But it had this beautiful, beautiful turn-of-the-century church that was huge. It was one of the biggest churches in Saginaw. And I'd go over there and I'd say, man, I would love to live in this house and just wake up and see that church every day. Well, we moved down to Detroit for one of my jobs, And I was down there for a year and a half. And now let me tell you something about the Detroit public school system. It really sucks. It's horrible. My son was doing so well up in the Saginaw. He went to Carleton Schools, where we lived at the time. And when we moved him down to Detroit, they didn't have time. Their classes were too big. There was no interaction. And he was lost. So I made the decision, look, I'm going to transfer back up to a store in the Saginaw area. And we moved up there, and it just happened to be because I just the first thing I thought of was that house. And it just so happened that at that time, her cousin was getting a divorce from her husband, and the house was up for sale. We couldn't afford that neighborhood. But because it was her cousin, she sold it to us for literally pennies on the dollar. We got the house, and I was able to wake up every morning looking at that church. Well, I truly believe that if you really want something and you make it known that you want something and you work towards it, be it the universe, be it God, be it Allah, Muhammad, Krishna, Buddha, whoever you worship can make it happen. And I truly believe that witches today are dwelling, or they know how to contact that inner spirit, whatever you want to call it, to, you know what, I'm going to make this spell. And listen, the witches of today are different than the witches of long ago. You know, the story of putting eye of toad, foot of newt, whatever you want to call it, into the pot and making a concoction are gone. The witches of today are using known pharmaceutical remedies that are natural. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Every disease that our human body has, we can get a natural remedy from any of the plants that are out there. There is a plant out there for every malady that we have, be it dementia, Alzheimer's, cancer, IBS, you name it. There is a plant out there that we can ingest that will cure us of that. Now, Big Pharma is not going to tell us that. It's just not going to happen. There's too much money in pharmaceuticals. But I believe these witches are getting in tune to it. Now, are there witches out there that are casting spells that are detrimental to someone? Yes. Are they using eye of newt, wing of bat? No, they're not. Because in this day and age, it's just not politically correct. You can't go to the store, buy a newt, take its eye out, and put it in a potion. You can't buy a bat from a store, cut its wing off, and put it in a potion. It's just not politically correct. So to be a witch today, it's just not the same. But there are witches out there, but it's the Wiccan religion. The Wiccan religion is basically a natural. Everything in nature revolves around everything. Everything in nature is alive. Trees, they're alive. You know, in a way, you could say that I could be a Wiccan, because I've watched my kids sit there and pound on a tree with a baseball bat, and I'm like, wait a minute, what are you doing? Knock it off. Because I believe those trees have feelings. Look, it's been proven that trees are social beings. If you see a group of trees and you have a sick tree over here, the rest of those trees are going to send nutrients through their roots, through the soil, to that tree. Those trees communicate with each other. And I truly believe that anything in nature that's alive, if it's growing, if it's conscious, it's alive. I truly believe that we are one with nature, and we take just huge advantage of nature. And I'm not saying, and I'm an environmentalist. I'm just saying, look, I make sure that I hate spiders. I hate snakes. Well, I shouldn't say I hate them. I'm terrified of them. But the guys at work, they want to bring a snake to me that's alive and scare the living daylights out of me. They want to throw spiders on me, scare the living daylights out of me, just because they think it's fun. Do I kill those snakes and spiders? No. They go outside. I don't kill living beings. Because think about it. We are a giant to them. What if this universe, we'll say, is a cell? And there's millions and millions of other cells that are universes out there. and we are part of a giant. And what if there's a bigger being than us that just happens to walk up on us and say, step on you, squish you? How would that make you feel? I value every life, be it human life, bee life, grasshopper life, moth life, tree life, anything. I do believe that plants are, their whole purpose is to feed us. So I don't believe that by taking the tomato, taking the cucumber, is hurting them, because I believe that is their whole purpose in life, is they are designed to feed us. They have this big cucumber or tomato. We pick it. They've done their job. But to sit there and crush that spider, squash that grasshopper. The only thing that I don't understand why it's around are mosquitoes. Everything I see around me has some type of purpose, but then there's the mosquito. Somebody, there's got to be an insectologist out there that listens to this show. Please contact me at GhostSeeker4 and tell me what the purpose of a mosquito is. Because I've done a lot of research. I've done a lot of looking into what the purpose of a bee, a wasp, a praying mantis, a moth. What? A bee. Yes, a bee. What? Okay, the Cosmic Dreamer here is questioning the purpose of a bee.
Are you saying why they, what their purpose is?
Yes, I'm telling you that the purpose of a bee is well known. It pollinates flowers, it pollinates plants. If bees die, then we don't have food to eat.
You really research this stuff?
I really research this stuff.
Pugs, what do you think?
Anyway, so Cosmic Dreamer's over here giving me crap because I researched what the purpose of a bee, a praying mantis, a fly is. And I've done that. Because look, if you've got a purpose in this on this planet, I don't want to kill you. But honestly, I haven't found the purpose of a mosquito other than to annoy the shit out of me, bite me. They're a food source. For what? Snakes?
Bats, spiders.
Snakes, bats, spiders. Three things that terrify me.
Okay.
So their point in life is to literally supply food for the things that terrify me.
Sure.
Okay. So the Cosmic Dreamer thinks that the whole point of a mosquito's existence is to keep...
I know.
Okay, he knows the whole point of the existence of mosquitoes is to keep the snake, the bat, and the spider population... They're to keep it up in order to scare me. That is
chain.
What?
The food chain.
The food chain.
You're welcome.
Okay, whatever. I really honestly think there's got to be something other than being lowest on the food chain that a mosquito is good for. I can't figure it out. Maybe it's to keep the population low, because really all mosquitoes are good for are spreading disease, right? No? What are they good for, Dreamer?
I already told you.
Food source. Food source. For what?
I just listed off.
Okay, snakes, spiders, and bats.
Yeah.
And what are those good for?
Let's see. They keep the rodent population down.
Who? The spiders?
Spiders do. Snakes definitely do.
Okay, I'll get you with snakes. I'm good. They'll keep... Maybe the little rodents, but...
No.
Huh?
No.
Yeah.
No.
I have not seen any spiders in the state of Michigan be able to take down a rodent.
In the state of Michigan.
Okay. Well, okay, in the state of Michigan, what is a mosquito good for?
Just the stuff I listed off.
A food source.
Exactly.
Okay, to keep the snakes alive, to keep the spiders alive, and the bats alive, right?
There has to be more, but sure.
There has to be more.
That's
and the unknown. See, this is my whole thing about the human population. We think we know everything, but we don't know squat. We don't know what's in our oceans. We don't know half of what's in outer space. How many times during the course of what?
I'd say 0.001%. That's all we really know.
So of what?
Space.
You could say that about the oceans. How many times a week do we find an article that says this changes the whole course of human knowledge?
Say every week.
Every week you get an article on that. Because we think we're the epitome of knowledge in the universe. Well, let's call a spade a spade. We are idiots. Because we think we know, but every week something changes to say, oh, yeah, we are changing the course of human knowledge. Boy, I've diverted topics. So, hey, Dreamer. Do you believe witches are real? Dreamer, come here. Come here. Hold on. We're going to get the Cosmic Dreamer back on the show this week. So for those of you that have been clamoring to hear the Dreamer, yeah, he's going to be on this show this week. Come on. Okay, he's walking this way. So the question is, Dreamer, do you believe, and I'm going to turn the mic a little bit so if you hear a little noise, do you believe that witches are real?
No, I just don't.
Okay, so when you think of witches, what do you think of?
I think of a witch, just Halloween in general, and then the trials of Salem.
So when you say witches and Halloween, are you thinking of the Wizard of Oz, the lady with the pointed hat, and the flying monkeys?
I don't think of flying monkeys, no.
What do you think?
Just the lady with the pointed hat.
Okay, so you think all witches have pointy hats?
Probably not.
Do you think that casting a spell can work?
No.
Why?
I just don't believe it. It's just like magic. It's just sleight of hand. It's not real. It's just
there is a lot of sleight of hand in magic, but
just illusions.
They okay, yes, but you cannot. And I'm not arguing with your point. I'm just trying to make a point here, and I guess I'm saying you cannot dissuade or you cannot disprove the law of affirmation.
I can't.
No, you can't. So do you believe that witches or spell casting is just you, as in you or me? Do you believe that it's just you or me creating something into existence by just us wanting it to happen? Do you think that's possible?
I do think that's possible.
So do you think witches of today could just be using that as their spell casting?
I mean, I guess. I'm not really sure.
Well, and I put you on the spot here, and I do apologize for that, and I apologize for the microphone moving noise, but that's just how it works. But, hey, you heard the Cosmic Dreamer for the first time in probably a year, thankfully.
Oh, it's been way over a year.
But anyway, but I think that's what the witches of today are, is people who just speak it into existence. I think it's just people that believe, and I truly believe, if you believe that you want something and you want something so bad and you make it happen, that's the key. You can't just sit back and expect it to happen. You have to actually work for it. It's called an affirmation, and I believe affirmations work. I believe affirmations are a legitimate source of truthfulness, I guess would be the word to say, but that's my thought. Do you have any parting words for us? I'm going to turn the microphone, so if you hear anything, I apologize. Cosmic Dreamer, thoughts on Salem witch trials or anything like that?
I got a question for you. You said you believe in spellcasting, correct?
To a point.
Where's the limit here?
Well, spellcasting to me is affirmations. Affirmations are, you speak it, and if you speak it enough, it becomes real. You speak it into existence. So
if I want to shoot fire out of my hands, and I believe it, and I'm like, and I work hard for it, I read all these books, it's just going to magically happen.
Okay, how are you going to work to get fire out of your hands? You have to have limitations. There's limitations to the human body. Do you think the human body can emit fire from your hands?
Well, if you put gasoline on your hand, yes.
Okay, so again, you have to work for it, but I wouldn't advise putting gasoline on your hands. There are limitations. You know, you're not going to turn into Spider-Man. You're not going to be able to shoot webs out of your wrist.
There's a lot of people who think you can.
There are a lot of people, but they can't do it because there's limitations on the human body. Unless you want to go into a laboratory and get bitten by a radioactive spider, I don't think that's going to happen.
Still wouldn't turn you into Spider-Man.
It probably would not. It would probably kill you. But Hollywood makes these great movies that turn radioactive spider bites into Spider-Man, and you have to... There are limitations. The human body has limitations. The human body cannot shoot flames out of your palm. However, I believe because we are an energetic being that we are able to have a magnetic field around us and we are able to control that magnetic field if we learn how to do it, and we can literally project a shield over us or project a force field over us. Because it would affect anything around us. In other words, if you have something, let's say you have an arrow shooting at you, and you have controlled the force field or the magnetic field or the energetic field around you.
So chakra.
Your chakras, yes.
Chakra, yes.
Your chakras. See, you know about chakras.
Yes.
So I believe that if we are able to control those and understand those and manipulate those, we can use those. I'm a firm believer that we as a human being do not even understand even a minute amount of the potential of the human body. I'm looking at you, Cosmic Dreamer, you're an energetic being. Inside of you, energy. Take your left hand and put it up in the air.
Okay.
Okay, so how did you do that?
My nervous system.
What in your nervous system caused you to do that?
The electricity in my nervous system.
Exactly. The neurons in your brain fired and told you to raise your left arm.
Damn, that's fast.
Exactly. So, with that being said, you are full of electricity.
That's why we get shocked.
So, I'm a firm believer that electricity can extend beyond our bodies if we know how to control it.
It's called static.
I wouldn't even call it static.
I would.
Okay, if you rub a balloon on your head,
I can transfer.
You can transfer electricity. Okay, yes. I'll give you that. If you rub a balloon on your head, you can put it on the wall and the balloon sits there. What I'm talking about is you taking, let's just say, in the Chinese, and there are some people that have been proven to be able to exude energy from the palm of their hands. So essentially, it's fire. It's energy. You're an energetic being. You are able to concentrate that. I mean, do this. Go like this and make a ball with both of your hands.
I don't know what you're trying to do this.
I'm telling you, make a ball. Just form a ball with both of your hands. Do you feel anything in your hand, in the palm of your hands? Do you feel any type of electricity?
I feel cold air.
That's the electricity, the static electricity. That's the electricity between both of your hands. Now it's gone. You just squashed it.
I did squish it.
So there are people that supposedly can take that energy and build it in the palm of their hands and shoot it outward. The Last Airbender. Have you seen that movie?
No.
It sucked. Anyway, the Last Airbender movie sucked, but the whole show or the whole series was very good. But it's very true. We can take that energy and we can move it. And I mean, if I do this, honestly, I can feel in my hands. I can feel the static electricity. I can feel the coldness. I can feel the energy. Now, what I've got to learn to do is concentrate that energy in the ball of my hands and shoot it right at your nuts and drop you.
What the hell?
Yeah, exactly.
What the hell?
Exactly. So, I've gone way off topic here. The Cosmic Dreamer's on the horn with us. Everybody say hi to the Cosmic Dreamer. Dreamer, what do you have to say about the show?
It's hilarious.
Why is it hilarious? It's not supposed to be hilarious.
Well, some of the topics are.
Okay.
Just your jokes in general. But it's also very informative.
Okay, what did you think about this show?
Pretty informative. It was disappointing to hear about what people did back then. And still history repeats itself.
Red flag laws. Doesn't that ring a bell? We're not going to get into politics this show, but I'll end this show with red flag laws. All right, anything else, Dreamer?
Bye.
Okay. Dreamer says bye, so we will end the show with that. I hope you enjoyed the return of the Cosmic Dreamer. It's been a long time. So we're going to end the show. We've actually gone way over what I anticipated, but we didn't anticipate the Cosmic Dreamer joining us, so I hope you enjoyed that.
I never do.
Yep. So I hope you enjoyed the show. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, anything you want to tell me, any show ideas, contact me at ghostseeker4@charter.net. You have been listening to The Paranormal Patriot. I'm going to wish you a happy Halloween. Next week, we're probably going to get into politics because it's that time of year. I've got a lot to talk about that I've been holding on. So you have been listening to The Paranormal Patriot. My name is Tom Velasquez. I will be back with you next week. Thank you so much for listening to the show. I'll talk to you later. I close my eyes and I ask myself, could I live without you?